This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Which button do I push again?
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart.
It's been a while.
With a rusty Dave Bourne.
Woo!
Can I get the knack back in here in the New Year's after having a little time off? Huh?
Yeah.
We missed you last week.
Hip surgery.
Hip surgery.
Yeah.
Wow. Makes you sound like a spring chicken there.
Yeah. Not feeling it.
You're younger than I am. But anyway, we welcome Dave Bourne back, and we welcome you. Thanks for joining us. This is your local talk hour every weekday. I'm Brent DeHart. We do local ideas and initiatives and institutions and individuals we talk about here in the Mid-Valley, a great place to live, and with a big focus on Salem and Kaiser, of course. But we love our folks out there in Polk County, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And up in the canyon and up north, there's even some. Now and then we get Aurora in the news.
Yeah.
And we got Scotts Mills in the news, too, as far as their dam is featured in the Statesman Journal article.
Really?
And there's a dam up there that, just doesn't need to be there.
Oh.
And normally, especially if it's hydropower, I'm not really in favor of getting rid of the dams.
No.
This one isn't even used for hydropower.
What?
So it's just a concrete wall, and it could be taken down, and maybe it'll be better for recreation. And
I don't think so.
Certainly better for anglers if they get more fish runs on the thing, because it's kind of a block. The thing was built, and if you read the Statesman Journal, you can pick this up, but the thing was built to to run a canal into a chase into the mill. Right, that was brand new.
In
the 1800s.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. In the 1800s, which the mill's not even there anymore.
Gotcha.
So now it's just a pool, and it's crumbling, and people are dying. And so, anyway, that's in the news. I'm like, I'll take it down. Let the river run free. Anyway, lots of things to talk about in this new year.
It's
the new year. It's our first Newsmakers in the new year. We haven't talked previously about some of the laws that got changed last year. That are going to change the landscape of a few things. And before the hour is up, I certainly want to talk about housing. Housing in Oregon. It's an article in Salem Reporter, actually. We're going to comment on, before the hour is up, having to do with how few houses got built in Oregon in the last, or even, I should say, housing, right? Residences got built in the last decade as a record low. But let's start off with some of these law changes, shall we?
Yes.
What are the first amusing things that happen? you go through the drive-thru at a fast food, and they can't give you a straw. And
right? You have to ask for it.
And I pulled up, and you know, I'm trying to get a soda pop, which I'm trying to cut back. You'd be happy to know.
Yeah. Just switch to iced tea or something.
And they're like, would you like a straw? As they're handing you a fountain drink with a cap on it, and I'm like,
and no straw.
Do you have to ask that all day long? And they're like, yes, we do. All day long in perpetuity. Is this why you elected the folks, people? Is this why you elected them? So, I don't know. I mean, if you go inside, obviously the straws are self-serve anyway. They don't have to ask you. But drive-through, you don't get a straw unless you request one. And then they know that you want one. Because you're driving in a vehicle and you don't want an open, you know, sloshing
container.
Already. You know? They know you want a straw, but they're required by law to ask you if you want a straw.
That's
Let's
silly.
Just make these minimum wage workers' jobs just a little bit more difficult.
Sure.
All right. Something more meaningful, though, shall we?
Okay.
Changes to Oregon's death penalty.
What?
Yeah. Went into effect last year, or it has gone into effect. They're changing which crimes can be assigned to the death penalty. And this is what the legislature did here in the state during the last long term, way back in 2019. And the goal is that fewer people are on death row, right? And fewer people, by extension, ever get the death penalty and are executed falsely. So what they did is they limited the number of crimes that can be aggravated murder, and only aggravated murder can get the death penalty. There were like 20 different crimes or classifications of these crimes that could be eligible for the death penalty, and they've limited that to 4 or 5.
So the three strike, you're out, Measure 11 thing?
Well, three strikes, you're out, has to do with life without, a life sentence, right? Not the death penalty.
It should be three strikes out, either life.
Firing squad?
Or firing squad. Come on.
The other thing that happened is the Supreme Court decided that a sentence that's effectively a life sentence without parole is cruel and unusual punishment for a minor, that minors could no longer receive effectively a life sentence. Those two things are connected. We've talked about this before. I've talked about it because it's personal to me, because my neighbors were murdered by Lysel and Lydell White. Well, now Lysel and Lydell White, now 41 years old, they're brothers. They killed my neighbors. And now they have to be re-sentenced because the Supreme Court says that their life without parole effective a life. And not just, they weren't sentenced to life without parole. They were sentenced to like 67 years or something like that. So plus their age, it's effectively life without parole. So effectively life without parole is also cruel and unusual if they were minors.
It's prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how could it be... It's supposed to be cruel and unusual punishment. It's prison.
Yeah. So they're 15 years old.
Yes.
And they're twins.
Right.
And they beat a man and his wife in their 80s to death with a club while laughing about it in their home, stole their pocket change and their car, and beat them to death. I call that cruel and unusual. Mm-hmm. And now the poor family has to deal with knowing that these kids are like the sad luck story. Like, I don't know. Anyway, they're 15 years old. Now they have to be resentenced in light of this Supreme Court change.
So it's quite possible they would be released.
Boy, I hope not. I hope not.
But it's possible.
They're 41. They were 15 at the time.
So
25 years they spent.
Wow.
Right. So, yeah, that's a tough one. And it makes me regret not even going and talking about how lovely this man was when you met him at the mailbox and how much he adored his wife. And I think he was 82, 83 years old. And he was adorable. My wife just thought he was something else because he idolized his wife. He would not tell you his life story at the mailbox. He'd tell you his wife's life story at the mailbox.
Nice.
So that's how much he loved her. And he had a club foot and he had diabetes and he was completely harmless, helpless, honestly. And he died watching his wife get beat to death. And I don't have any Christian thoughts for Lysel and Lydell White.
No, that's pure evil right there.
That is pure evil at the time. And
yeah.
So, and then there's forgiveness. I get there's an argument for forgiveness, but the people who preach forgiveness sometimes forget that it doesn't equate to don't hold responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness doesn't mean don't hold responsible. Anyway, then the death penalty in Oregon. That's going to be interesting how this plays out. Because they're going to have fewer crimes, which means the district attorneys are going to have to pick and choose very specifically what they charge somebody who's guilty or presumed guilty of ending another human being's life, right? So there were 20 different classifications, circumstances. Now there's 4. One is terroristic killings of 2 or more people. Okay, so you can go to the death penalty for that. Premeditated murder of police officers, murder committed in jail or prison of somebody who's already committed from somebody who's already committed murder.
Mm.
So you've got somebody in prison convicted of murder and they murder again in prison, and a premeditated murder of a child under age 14. So those are the only 4 crimes and circumstances now in Oregon that can be a death penalty case.
It would only make a difference, though, if they actually enforce the death penalty here in Oregon.
That is another conversation, and I want to hit on that.
Okay.
Right? Let's take a quick break and come back about the enforcement and about whether or not we should have the death penalty at all. And I think I might surprise you. I'm Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to the first Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. We're talking the death penalty. Everybody wants to start the year off talking about the death penalty, but don't worry. We're going to get into housing and some other laws here coming up during the hour. I should clarify that with the Whites case, Lysel and Lydell White, the murderers who are in prison for beating 80-year-olds to death in their own home, in their own beds, they're not up for resentencing yet because that action has been stayed pending the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's looking at the case, the U.S. Supreme Court, I should say. They're looking at the case from the man Lee Malvo, who had killed 10 people in D.C. With a sniper rifle. It was a mass shooting and what have you. And he was only 17 at the time. And so before the Supreme Court is the argument that a 17-year-old should not be sentenced to life in prison. So that's going to affect Lysel and Lydell White in his case in Oregon. So okay. It's not going back to sentencing just yet, but if it were not for the federal case or pending the disposition of the federal case, they may yet still. So the death penalty, here's the thing. I'm against the death penalty in America. And that should not be mistaken to think that I don't think that some people deserve to die.
Interesting.
I probably would have injected, pulled the switch, pulled the trigger on these boys that beat my neighbors to death.
Right.
Myself. Some people, I believe, you take and abduct a child and kidnap, imprison, sexually abuse, physically abuse, and murder a child, that person deserves to die. Okay. That is not leaving that person in our community of human beings, to me, is not a benefit. However, as Dave Bourne was talking about during the break, ranting a little bit at me, we're not enforcing the death penalty.
No.
So then the fiscal conservative in me jumps out and says, we spend so much money defending and with automatic appeals and all these attorneys that we were required to try to overturn the death penalty and have automatic appeals that go on for years and years and years. It's more expensive to try to get to the execution than it is just to sentence them to life in prison. So
did you do the math?
No. Okay. No, I didn't do the math, but that's how I feel about it.
You're doing the feeling thing.
Oh, sorry.
Got to do the math.
Oh, got to do the math. Okay, we'll have to do the math. Well, like in some, you take some very harsh, very strict communities like those in Singapore. Well, they just execute you.
Publicly.
On the street. Or they cane you for throwing a candy wrapper on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Publicly cane you. So that's a deterrent. Because you're not going to survive misdeeds in Singapore, right? In America, I don't believe the death penalty is a deterrent. I don't believe that anybody who is committing that act, be it an act of passion or premeditated, I don't think anyone is thinking, well, there's the death penalty in this state and maybe not in that state. And, I don't think it's a deterrent.
No. Well, here in Oregon, no matter how many times they change the laws about the death penalty, they're not enforcing it. There's so many people on death row.
Well, there's a moratorium, and it has been since Kitzhaber.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Do you remember the last time that they televised the death penalty?
Oh, no. Heavens, no.
Really?
No. Did we?
I remember
They televised
that.
It? Really?
Yeah.
In Oregon? Oh, he's thinking. Anyway.
I don't know if it was Oregon anyway, or not, but that, they did televise one.
That's the thing about
it. I remember
it.
That. That was a deterrent for me.
It's not. Well, that's good. I'm glad that kept yes, you from performing all those murders.
Yes.
Anyway, I just don't think it's a deterrent in America because the way we administer the death penalty, because of the way we have put in all of the mandated appeals. Remember the guy in Oregon that could not get executed and he wanted to waive his appeals? He just said, let's get it over with. And then they jumped in and said, no, you can't waive your own rights. Do you remember that?
Yes, I actually
do. On and on.
What the heck was
up
with that?
He's like, nope, I've been sentenced to death. I don't want to be on death row anymore. I'm never leaving this prison. Please carry out my sentence. And basically, anyway, laws changing and Supreme Courts are changing how people are being sentenced. And in Oregon, the law is changing in terms of how many people can't even be eligible, how many criminals, I should say, who get convicted can even be eligible for the death penalty.
It doesn't matter. They don't enforce it.
Goes back to, is this why you elected them? Is this why you elected them?
No.
So I got to go there. I got to go this. We were talking about this before the show, completely changing the subject with no segue.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
But who are we electing and the decisions we're making? The homeless in Salem.
Uh-huh.
So they banned camping. So you know what they're doing? They're sleeping without the tents.
Right.
Because they're not camping if you don't have a tent. So they're lined up on an entire city block downtown where people should be shopping around Nordstrom's.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire city block is full of garbage.
Right.
It's full of belongings, shopping carts.
Sleeping bags. Towels.
And on and on. Yeah. And folded up tents because they can't, quote unquote, camp. So they found a little overhang there by the shopping structure, and they sleep there. And it's in the right-of-way, and it's on the sidewalk, and they're impeding people's traffic to walk through this right-of-way. So what a mess, folks. I looked at that this morning, and I thought, boy, we've got a city council that really has no solutions.
No, they banned camping and said they were going to put them up somewhere. But then they are not ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks, really? Yeah.
It has to, you know, if it goes back to the sit lie ordinance that they were too cowardly to pass.
Right.
Because I remember this quote in the paper, and it was Chris Hoy, and he was worried about people perceiving it as being, you know, as that they don't care enough. Right.
What?
They're worried about public perception, not in actually executing sound public policy.
Hey.
I think that, oh, well, we're not, you know, benevolent enough. Oh. We might be perceived as not being, you know, caring enough. How about some sound? How about just you're elected there? If you want to, please make the tough decisions and make them for all of Salem, not just a couple hundred people on the street.
Right.
But when do people start impeding on other people's rights? Then something has to change. They have rights. They're human beings. And we have feelings for them. But when they make decisions that impede on other people's rights, then you got to do something about it. Anyway, so we flushed them out of Gateway Park. We flushed them out of Wallace Marine Park. We created a tent city. And now, oh, we're going to ban the camping.
Right.
And okay, camping. You know what they can do? Dave Bourne, I was told this morning. I don't know if it's true or not. If they use a shopping cart and then or two and they surround it with tarps, that's not a tent and therefore not camping.
Yikes.
So
we used to, my brother and I used to call that a fort.
Yeah.
Just saying.
We'll have to ask the mayor next time we have him on. But
that's a couple of weeks from
and
now.
And, you know, in a community like that of people who have chosen to be homeless or people who are currently involuntarily homeless, word gets out very quickly, word of mouth. It's like, the police can do this, they can't do this. The police can say this, they can't say this. You can be here, but you can't be here. You can set up a tarp, but not a tent. You can sleep on the sidewalk in our downtown business district, in our shopping district. And you could still sleep there because we didn't pass the sit lie ordinance.
So do they cook their meals in the gutter? Is that the fires are?
I mean, I don't know. Are they still walking over?
They're still cooking their stuff.
Yeah,
but where?
Know. There's a lot of people that come and bring them foods. Nonprofits, of course, and you have some church groups and some restaurants even, and they'll just come up and say, hey, we've got some food and so forth. So.
I saw a news story last night on the TV. One guy was showing how he got frostbite on his toes, and other ones had messages on their blankets. Shame on you, Mayor Bennett.
What?
So, yeah.
For what?
For,
Mayor Bennett?
For, yeah.
He's like straddling the line on this whole
thing. I know, but you know, they're blaming the mayor for this because they passed a thing saying there's no camping, but then they didn't have a place for them to go. So it comes back to the leadership.
I hear Portland's nice.
I beg to differ with that one.
Well, they have a lot of accommodations for
people. I could just see it now. Salem's putting up big boulders like they did in Portland on the sidewalks here.
So you were gone. Last week, we had on a candidate for city council. All right. So I shamelessly plugged him because I do believe we need, some changes there.
How is Reed, by the way?
Reed, I thought he did well.
Yeah.
And I thought he made a very astute point with the homeless. Is we need to stratify people who are involuntarily homeless, do not have shelter because they had medical bills and they couldn't pay the rent anymore, right? They got laid off and they couldn't pay the rent anymore. So many Americans are living within a paycheck of being homeless, right?
Correct.
Which is a whole nother conversation entirely. But Reed's son said, we need to stratify these. And the people who are involuntarily homeless, especially if they have families, and they want to do something about it, they want to have shelter, and they want to have services, and they want job programs, and they want, you know, medical help, and they want, you know, the help to get them into housing. That's one population of people. Then there's a population that the mayor talks about that's almost the hardest to house.
Right.
I've been on the streets 10, 15, 20 years, and I've chosen it, and I will not take help, and I will not take my psychiatric meds.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're like, leave me alone. These are my rights. I'm going to do whatever I please. That's a different population, or people who literally cannot make a practical and rational decision for themselves because of mental illness, unmedicated mental illness.
Right.
That's a completely different population. And we need to stop talking about the homeless like it's one homogenous group. These are two different groups.
Yep. Well, there's stages of homelessness.
Yes, indeed. All right. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. I want to talk a little about housing. Very interesting numbers coming out of the last decade of economic growth. And, of course, we've got the Home and Garden Show is coming up this weekend. That is always a fun thing. So if you have a house, you may want to head up to that. But let's talk about what the Oregon economy has done and what public policy is doing to home building in Oregon. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Indeed.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. I wanted to touch on housing. Housing is so important in terms of our economy.
just bash myself in the head.
We're never letting Dave Bourne have a week off again. Can't find the buttons. He hits himself in the face with his own microphone. All right. So a report out. Check it out on the Salem Reporter. Boy, I can't say enough about the Salem Reporter, but if you're not a subscriber yet, go subscribe. This thing about housing and what's really surprising about it in this last decade here in Oregon is basically the bottom line to what I'm reading through this is we're not building enough, and it has a huge amount to do with why rents and housing are so expensive. Do you think that's connected to the public policy coming out of the marble structure downtown?
Yes.
I think so, too. So it was a record low. Now, if you live in West Salem, you live in South Salem, even some areas in east, eastern part of Salem, in and out of the city limits, you see a lot of housing getting built. However, overall, it is a record low in terms of how many houses are being built per population going back all the way to the 60s. So most of these quotes come from Josh Lehner. He's a state economist with has a blog. He posted just on New Year's Eve, actually. And his quote is on a population growth adjusted basis. So accounting for how many people are in the state.
Okay.
You know, they built fewer new housing units this last decade than we have since World War II.
That's so it's not really a housing boom then.
Unbelievable. We built 37 new housing units per 100 new residents. 37 per 100 new residents. Now, in the last 50 years, 1960 to 2009, Oregon permitted 47 per 100 instead of 37 per 100. So for those 50 years, the rate of housing per resident was considerably higher, 20% higher
right,
or so, than it was in this last decade, even though we've had all this economic growth in Oregon. So this is a problem, folks, and people who are in public policy, they whine and scream and bemoan about the high rents, right? How working class people can't afford housing, and how the short. Well, this is related to what you do. So do something about it. Do something that creates the ability for people to make a living and people to make money building affordable housing, building housing. You know what? In this economy, there's a lot of people. A lot of my friends are building $600,000 and $700,000 homes. Well, we need some $300,000 homes as well.
Yes.
Now, when you make land use rules, system development charges, if you're not familiar with those folks, extra charges having to do in Salem, I think it's like $18,000 right out the gate. So
serious.
The shortage of land. So now you're looking at $100,000 just for the land, plus or minus, to build a buildable lot, nice buildable lot. $100,000. Now you're looking at $120,000, pushing $150,000 probably by the time you've paid all your fees, all your system development charges, and the land before you've bought your first 2x4. There's a problem with that. And I mentioned that. We talked about this last year when the House Speaker, Tina Kotek, spoke to the home builders here in town. And I said, couldn't you do something about supply? Couldn't you do something in public policy that increases the supply of buildable land so that the prices can come down?
Sure.
But no. What did they pass? Rent control.
Of course.
Rent control.
It all right. Has to do with that urban growth boundary, too, that we talked about.
So, Mr. Lehner.
Right?
Yes. Okay. Oh, the urban growth boundary. And that's true not just in Salem-Keizer, but all over the state.
It is.
So, one thing that's good for business, though, bad for traffic, is that we know that most all the growth in Oregon in the next generation is going to be along the I-5 corridor.
Right.
So, that's one of the things I keep talking about when it comes to commercial air service. Like, it's all going to be along the I-5 corridor. That's where the concentration and the density is going to be because of the urban growth boundary. It just is. All right. So Mr. Lehner, state economist, he wrote that it's gotten worse throughout the last decade. And the root problem is low levels of housing construction. It's not just Brent, folks. State economist said it's low levels of housing construction.
Because it's so expensive to start it, as you put it. That is such a roll of the dice as a developer. Mm-hmm. I know a former developer. He lost it all in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Started another business, which is way more successful and less stressful and less risky.
Yeah. And we do find, folks, fewer people in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that stuck it out, I've got a business relationship with somebody that builds trusses, right?
Right.
Trusses. So the A-frame things that go on top of your houses and other buildings, folks. And they were one of the few trust companies still standing after the recession.
Right.
So the people that stuck it out, and now we have a higher concentration of people in the building trades, and fewer options, and they're all really packed and so forth. And we've already talked about many, many times the availability of people to go work in those trades in a growing economy. All right, so rent. So this is, let's follow this downhill. Cost of building houses.
Following the dots.
The shortage of houses.
Sure.
So the high price of getting houses means fewer people can go to the bank and buy their own home, the American dream.
Right.
Fewer people can do that because of the cost of housing. So then they're going to be renters. Well, what's happened in rent? From 2010, average rent, $816. Median rent in Oregon. That's from the Census Bureau.
Is that one room or studio?
It doesn't say. Median rent. It's gone up to $1,079.
That's a two-bedroom, one bath, I believe.
And mind you, that's Oregon, so we have to average in Lake County, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Prineville and Baker and everything else. So this is not Metro. It's not even Salem Kaiser. But it gives you an idea of how much the rents have increased in this last decade. And rents going up and pricing the working class people that the Democrats are supposed to represent. And they are pricing them out of their own homes,
mm-hmm.
out of their own housing. And then you wonder why. Then you wonder why people have such tenuous situations with their home, with their housing. All right. So it was the first state, by the way. Lest we forget, in 2019, now that we're all the way into 2020,
mm-hmm.
we're the only state that has passed statewide rent control. We're the only ones. All the other 49 have it wrong, Dave Warren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know New York tried that?
As a state? I know New York City did in a big
city,
way.
The city did.
Yeah.
And obviously it failed.
Yes, and continues to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's outrageous to try and rent or buy in New York City.
Unbelievable.
It's just ridiculous.
When you're living just, and when you're working and living just to have a roof over your head.
Now you have to have like five roommates.
Which, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Have you had five roommates before?
I have. I've had three roommates in a two-bedroom duplex. And I look at some of the kids, including my kids, go through college, and I had it much worse. I mean, I was far more, well, this is how much money we have, so
uh-huh.
this is all we can afford.
Right.
So we shared a bedroom because that's how much
yeah.
we could afford. And now it's like, whoa, I want my own room. I'm like, well, let's talk about wanting and can be able to afford.
What you can afford.
Yeah. Now they give credit to kids in college so they can just borrow more money and not have to tighten their belt.
And then they complain about the debt that they're in when they get out of college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, talk exactly.
About, you just, and then you forgive it. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Where'd all that money go? That's our money. That went to them, and now they're writing it off. Gosh, they don't do that for me.
They didn't tighten their belts. Then they get out of college, and they have not yet learned how to tighten their belts.
Right?
And that's a problem.
Call mom.
Yeah. 1-800. Hey, folks.
Hey, Dad.
One big thing that they did pass in House Bill 2001, they're allowing duplex, triplex, and some options like that to be built in land that's zoned for a single family.
I bought one of those.
So, oh, well, great. So, yeah. You know, and that makes it more affordable. It's still a really nice residential environment.
It feels like a single family home.
Yeah.
Even though I'm attached to another home.
Right. And then the land cost gets split between the two homeowners.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And so forth. So that was a nice solution. Way to go. Tina Kotek would say that they dedicated $200 million to affordable housing development. Some $55 million to affordable housing preservation and $50 million to state homeless assistance programs. My point is, if you create the problem, maybe you should back off the things that created the problem
mm-hmm.
instead of just throwing money at the problem that you created.
Sounds like the school system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how affordable are those new houses though? Because mine was not that affordable.
No, it's still not. It's still not. And we're still looking at our housing in Oregon outpacing the rate of inflation. So and it's tough because nobody wants sprawl. Nobody wants sprawl.
Right.
However,
not in my backyard.
The population is growing.
It is.
Yeah. So if we don't want them to live in tents in downtown Salem,
which could happen,
then maybe we should allow the development of housing for the people who are going to live here. Right.
And it comes down to the urban growth boundary. Again, it's good on one side because it helps keep protect the farms from being overrun, but then it raises the cost of housing and rent and everything else inside that. I don't think they expand it enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think it's like, what, every 20 years? And they only move it a couple of miles?
It's everyone is a unique situation.
Yeah.
But it does take a lot of administration. There's a lot of bureaucratic red tape things to do. And, you know, some cooperation and collaboration with surrounding jurisdictions if you're going to move it. And if you're moving it into farm territory, you might have pushback against, you know, the Farm Bureau or 1,000 friends of whatever. And, yeah, it's always a very complex and contentious thing to move an urban growth boundary. We got to take a quick break. Let's come back and finish talking about the news here in our new year. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to The Valley's Local Talk here on KYKN. A lot of topics today. We started with the death penalty. We moved on to housing, a couple of things in the news. One of these things, this is the Statesman Journal, little article about non-affiliated voters continuing to climb.
Really?
And once again, we have to remind people, but please don't sign up to be an independent unless you do want to be a member of the independent party, because it's an actual political party. So non-affiliated is the word for I don't want to be a member of a party. So,
but then you don't get a say in the primaries.
You don't get a say in the primaries at all. You get to sit back and watch, or you can register as a primary and then change back, whatever. But when I saw the headline, I thought, oh, well, people are leaving, you know, the two-party system. But really, this has more to do with the voter law.
And what?
That when you get your license, or when, you know, say you move to Oregon and you get an Oregon driver's license, or you turn 16 or 17, you get your drive, they're going to register you to vote unless you specify I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat or what have you. They're going to register you as an unaffiliated voter.
Oh, well, they switched that then.
Yeah. And so,
because the default was Democrat.
There is not. Oh, I didn't hear that. No.
I was registered as a Democrat for many years and didn't know it.
Wow. 951,000, almost 952,000 non-affiliated voters.
Really?
Yeah. It's gone up by 7% since last January. So, or about 60,000, actually. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. Because you can register them to vote, and then what's going to turn, mark my words, these are going to be statistics that people cite as an example of this. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to connect this and say the cause is that, like voter turnout. Voter turnout is going to go down in May. You know why it's going to go down? Because you just registered a bunch of people to vote who had never been registered to vote and maybe didn't want to be registered to vote and do not ever vote. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we're doing a great job getting them registered, but I highly speculate, shall we say, that voter turnout will go down. And they go, oh, what's happening to Oregon voters? What's happening? When it's not related to people choosing not to vote, that's the same people that have chosen not to vote, but you registered them anyway.
And they didn't know it.
Yeah.
Like me.
Like you.
Because I was so excited to get my driver's license when I turned 16, I didn't even notice that I was registered as Democrat.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
We didn't even have motor voter back then. Anyway, for whatever reason.
Yes, they did.
Non-affiliated voters.
Didn't they do that?
I think.
The 80s.
I thought it was much more recent than that. We'll have to dive into that.
Yes.
Anyway, so don't be fooled, folks, with statistics or stutterers.
Easy for you to say.
So more voters, more non-affiliated voters, doesn't necessarily mean that they're leaving their party of choice. I know a lot of people have become disenchanted. If they're not a President Trump fan, but they're Republicans, maybe they left that party, or maybe they hope that they didn't like all the taxes that were passed this last, you know, one party legislative session.
Yes. Ridiculous.
Taxes and rules with just one party voting for them. And if they overreached, maybe they'll lose some of their.
If they overreached, really?
I guess you'd say if enough people feel as though they have overreached.
My pockets got picked.
All right. This is amusing to me because as an employer, I've been an employer for going on 30 years, and I'm always afraid of violating any sort of wage and hour law, any mm-hmm. workplace law, any workplace safety regulation. It's just, as a small employer, you're like, I can't get hit with fines. I don't want to be, you know, reported. I don't want to, and plus, I don't want to do anybody any harm.
Right.
I want to do everything by the book. And then these workers for the state of Oregon, they were promised raises. They were told it was effect, and they didn't get their money.
Whoops.
It's the DHS workers at that, right?
Oh.
Maybe we'll spend some time talking about this tomorrow, but it is sad and tragic for these people who were promised raises almost 6 months ago. And then they were told, yeah, it's coming. And now the state's going to have to do the back pay and everything. How hard is it? Open your computer and go clickety clickety click and change their rate, people. Wow.
Did they get it in writing?
They're acknowledging that they're owed the money and they're owed the raise.
Interesting.
They reclassified a whole block of people, but they can't explain why they didn't get the raise in their paychecks, and a lot of them were hoping to spend that money for the holidays. Right?
Oh.
So maybe we'll lead with this story tomorrow because, hey, I wanna stand up for the public employee here. And I don't always,
no,
right?
No, you don't.
So this is inexcusable. This is, wow. All right, folks, that's it for today. But we're going to do this again tomorrow. So I hope you join us for some local talk with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.